and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. And we all know that the truth will set you free. But the question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? I deal with mental health issues across the board each week. My approach is a much more holistic approach in terms of helping people establish a balance in their lives between body, mind, and the spiritual sense of who they are. And as an openly gay therapist and human being, I often or sometimes do shows related directly to gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender issues or GLBT issues. And since this weekend is Gay Pride in Phoenix, last week and this week I've picked topics very specific to the GLBT community. And today we're going to be talking about the plight of GLBT teenagers. So if you've listened to my show in the past, you know I've done a couple of shows related to this. About a year and a half ago, I actually had a 24-year-old who had been a teenage runaway. He had been on the streets. His family had rejected him. He talked about the life on the streets as a gay teen in terms of drug abuse, prostitution, the sense of feeling so lost and unincluded. And he was one of the lucky ones who found the right kind of help and was able to get back on his feet and was now reaching out to other teens who have been going through this. And about a year ago, I had a middle school guidance counselor from the Riverside area of California who talked about her experience in helping a 13-year-old girl deal with her sexual identity issues, coming out as a lesbian in a middle school, no less, and the type of support this very conscious counselor was able to offer. And the acknowledgement that this is a very rare thing. Number one, that a teenager that young is willing to risk coming out, that she would miraculously actually come to a counselor within the school system that was that supportive, and a family that was dealing with the initial reaction of surprise, shock, but also showed up in a very loving and supportive way. This is happening much more frequently in terms of people coming out of the closet as teenagers, and it has to be dealt with. So tonight this afternoon we're going to be talking about the plight and pain of GLBT teens. And there are a number of statistics, actually, that I hate getting into the cold, hard facts of statistics. It's not usually my style, but there are some statistics I think are important to listen to. Number one, suicide is the leading cause of death among gay and lesbian youth. Number two, gay and lesbian youth are 2 to 6 times more likely to attempt suicide than heterosexual youth. Number three, over 30% of all reported teen suicides each year are committed by gay and lesbian youth. Now, those statistics come from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Resources in 1989. So, you know, those things may have changed, but probably not for the better, because you're probably getting more information from teenagers who are attempting suicide that might make more inclusive than that category of GLBT youth. We all know that it's not an easy thing being a gay youth. I mean, my own situation growing up, I mean, I was a fat, klutzy, uncoordinated kid and teenager, and, you know, it's called things like sissy and a lot of other things that went on back in the 60s. But today, there's a much greater consciousness about what gay and lesbian is, you know, because there's more seen in the media, on TV programs, even on some of the programs aimed at teenagers and kids. And so there's a greater consciousness, which also means a great sense of compassion maybe being built into other teens and a greater sensitivity, but also people knowing what they're looking for and knowing how to attack may also be an issue. Now, the topic tonight was motivated actually because I went to a screening in L.A. of a new film that has yet to open in the Phoenix area called Latter Days, which is basically dealing with the coming out of a Mormon missionary. And it was written and directed by a friend of mine named C.J. Cox. And at the opening, which was actually a fundraiser for an organization called the Trevor Project, I met this afternoon's guest, George Valencia, who's the executive director of the Trevor Project. And the Trevor Project, and I'm going to have him explain more about what the project does and why it does it, is a nonprofit endeavor established to promote tolerance for gay and questioning teenagers and to aid in suicide prevention among that group. The Trevor Project operates the Trevor Helpline, the only nationwide around-the-clock toll-free suicide prevention hotline for gay and questioning youth. Now, I really like the fact that they use that term, questioning youth. And we're going to talk about that. So my guest this afternoon is George Valencia, Executive Director of the Trevor Project. George, you there? Hello? Well, I think maybe I lost my connection with George Valencia of the Trevor Project. And until we get that back.
George, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. You there?
Oh, yes. I can hear you the whole time.
Oh, good. So you weren't lost.
I was not lost.
Just in the technical aspect of the show. Well, welcome to it, to the show. Tell the truth faster.
Well, thank you very much, Stuart. And
and you did hear my whole intro.
I sure did.
Okay.
Thank you. And yes, one of the, you know, in talking about the questioning part of it, we have, we get about 700 to 800 calls a month from all over the nation. And 40% of those that call are teens that are having thoughts or that are questioning their sexuality. And our first and primary objective is to make sure that they understand that suicide is not an option. And we try to get them past any suicidal thoughts or tendencies that they may have. And once we feel confident that we have achieved that, then we begin to direct them to other resources after we've tried to create their own a support system for themselves in their hometowns. And we do that by first discerning from the caller whether there is a family member that they can talk to about what they're going through and the possibility that they may be gay or lesbian. If for some reason they're not comfortable with a family member, then we start moving into perhaps an adult that they can confide in. If that doesn't work, then we move towards friends, teachers, someone in their religious affiliations. And what turns up more than often is that they're not comfortable talking to anyone, and 30% of those callers call us repeatedly, and the Trevor Project becomes their support system until they're confident that they're and feel safe in being able to talk to someone about it or move on, you know, with a healthy life.
Well, I think that having worked hotlines, in fact, it was one of the first experiences I had actually in college as a peer counselor manning an on-campus hotline. The issue of anonymity is what makes people most comfortable calling a hotline before they're able to do something face-to-face, which is one of the reasons I think I get some of the callers I get. People are, you know, they can stay anonymous and still get the support and help they need. What is your thoughts in terms of, you know, I know you said you first try and find someone local that they can talk to face-to-face. Face-to-face, but I know that a lot of them, especially in certain regions of the country, you know, are deathly afraid to
sit down and look someone in the eyes and say, I think I'm gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender, what are some of the issues that they bring up? What are some of the phrases that my listeners might want to connect with people that they...
You know, when you were talking about your experience growing up and being called names, that certainly hasn't stopped. You know, while there's more awareness about, just the long-term effect of name-calling, especially things like fag or lesbian or whatever it may be, the reason that we are a free and confidential service is for that reason, so that teens feel comfortable talking to someone and being able to express what they're going through. And so it is. I mean, as a suicide helpline, you have to understand that we need to make sure and follow through if we feel we have not gotten through to an individual. And there have been times where we have had to call the paramedics. We are able to see someone's phone number, and we certainly don't reveal that because it is confidential. But there have been times where we have called in the paramedics, and they have arrived in time to save a child's life. And the response that we've gotten back from parents who had no idea, and thank goodness many of them have been very supportive, but it took something like that, paramedics to arrive to someone's home before they realized just the turmoil that their child is going through. And that's why there are many other organizations that also assist us in making sure that the teens feel safe in their school environment. And in some regions, it's more difficult than others, but we feel like we're making some headway in that.
Well, we see a lot more in the news. I mean, there was an article just yesterday in the LA Times about this teenage girl who is a lesbian who was harassed in New York City public school and sued, and I think got a $30,000 settlement, and the schools had to make some changes in their own harassment at Susan. You'd think in New York City, where there's actually a high school devoted to GLBT youth, that it would be less likely. So then you consider, in middle America or rural America, where there may not be as much consciousness, you find more of your calls are coming from urban areas or rural areas. I think we lost George again. So we're going to take a short break here and deal with our technical issues. And we'll come right back.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. I don't know what's going on with our board today, but
I apologize. I'm sitting put on a landline. So.
Okay. So we were talking about the difference between urban and rural.
Right. And we definitely get more calls from rural areas. When you add all the numbers up, they definitely add up to more because of the limited resources that they have or they're aware of. And we have an extensive resource system where we direct them to, different places that they can go, and if they want to talk to someone face-to-face or organizations. We get calls from parents. We get calls from everyone wanting to help. I have to say that's the first step. Most of the time when someone calls is because they want to be directed in a fashion that will help them deal with whatever issues they are, or with their child. If they think that their child might be gay or lesbian, what do they do to protect them, and what kind of resources do we have for them?
So you actually get parents calling into the Trevor hotline, which does something certainly about the parents. And last week's show actually was on PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, and they talked about actually getting calls from some of the kids trying to reach out to their parents and stuff. So it's very interesting how the focus of the two organizations really overlaps in certain ways, and yet both of you have an initial population you're reaching, and yet gets from the other side of the spectrum.
I think, and Stuart, I think that what happens is that the first thing that people come across, they tend to call. If it has, GLBT anywhere in there, they'll tend to call that place first and then hopefully get directed. But interesting that you should talk about PFLAG, because last June, Dear Abby mentioned this in her column, and she had a young woman that wrote in saying that she felt uncomfortable talking to her parents about her feelings with another young woman. And the two organizations that the Dear Abby column mentioned were PFLAG and the Trevor Project.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, and, Abby's always been a very great support for the GLBT community.
Yes, and we certainly had a spike in calls, four times the number of calls throughout the rest of that month from that column.
Wow.
And so the awareness is definitely necessary. And it shocks me that up until 6 years ago, before the Trevor Project started, there just wasn't a nationwide 24/7, toll-free number for kids that were contemplating suicide that are gay and questioning the call. And that's one of the things that I'm extremely proud of our organization, and that we're really trying to get the word out there.
Well, you mentioned about it being in existence 6 years. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the Trevor Project?
I'd love to. We got our start from a short film called Trevor that won an Oscar in 1994 for Best Live Action Short. And it wasn't until 1998 when HBO approached the filmmakers about airing it on HBO. And they asked Ellen DeGeneres to do an intro for it. And Ellen DeGeneres gladly gave up her time to do an intro for the short film. And HBO aired it for about 5 years. And periodically they would put it in, and it's about a 12-minute short film. It's about a young man. It addresses the subject of suicide and a young man who begins to have feelings for another young man his age, a 13-year-old. And it was at that time when HBO approached them that the filmmakers said, well, let's see if we can direct, kids to a number to call in case it touches them, and they're feeling the same things that they're seeing depicted in the short film. And in calling around, they found out that there wasn't a nationwide suicide helpline for gay and questioning teenagers. And they decided to found the Trevor Project at that point and create the Trevor Helpline.
And have you been involved in it since its inception, or how did you get involved?
No, I'm going now on 3 years. And we are still very young. We survive on $400,000 a year, and that's for staffing, that's keeping the helpline, awareness, brochures, everything that's necessary to just get the word out to kids, including a curriculum that we have for schools that teach tolerance and suicide prevention and identifying suicidal signs in teens, which can be downloaded free off of our website. And by the way, that website is www.thetrevorproject.org. And many schools, especially on the East Coast, use that curriculum with this short film to teach tolerance. But
well, how did you get involved with the Trevor Project?
No, it was actually 3 years ago when I went to one of their fundraising events, kind of like you did with ours in L.A. for that premiere, and I heard talk of the Trevor Project, and at that point it was still surviving on just enough money to keep the helpline open, and they had a successful event and were looking for someone, and I was very interested, and I'm a very lucky man because of my involvement with them.
And let's get back to talking actually about suicide. I know I've done shows on that before also, but, what are some of the warning signs that parents or even school officials need to be looking for in terms of potential suicide?
Well, you hear the ones, and people can go to our website also and see those as well, but there's some pretty just withdrawal a lot from just everything and everyone, not talking. The really telltale ones are when they start talking in past tense, start giving things that are personal belongings that mean something to themselves to other kids or to friends and family. Those are signs that are very, very clear. But a lot of times, these kids do a very good job of hiding it. And most of the time, the calls we get are right after school when the parents aren't home. I would say the most important one is just kids withdrawing and not talking and coming home and, you know, either locking themselves in their room and not wanting to talk about anything. A parent knows an immediate change in behavior with a child, and while a lot of parents think that it's because it's the teenage years, you know, the rebellious side isn't always just a sign of a kid who is disappointed or disillusioned.
Mm-hmm.
And those are some of the things. I would say that in terms of teachers and school administrators, you know, if they notice that a dramatic drop in someone's schoolwork and their participation in the relationships with others and not being involved, I think that's a good sign that it's time to talk to someone, you know, to talk to the student.
Very good. And I would think that part of the reason you get so many calls, like right after the school hours, is probably because they had a particular bad day at school that day with harassment or, you know, some kind of abuse or attack.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're going to take a short break here, and we're going to return talking about the plight and pain of GLBT youth and with George Valencia of the Trevor Project. So this is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM in Phoenix. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and today we are dealing with the plight and pain of GLBT teens, that's gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender teens. And my guest today is George Valencia, the executive director of the Trevor Project, which has the only nationwide around-the-clock toll-free suicide prevention hotline for gay and questioning youth. George, before the break, you were talking about signs of suicide risk, and actually those are the risks that may be adolescents or adults, but one of the things that I know is also a sign is increased substance abuse as a way of coping. And again, getting back to some statistics, we have here also from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, that gay and lesbians are at much higher risk than the heterosexual population for alcohol and drug abuse. Approximately 30% of both the lesbian and gay male population have problems with alcohol. Substantially higher proportion of homosexual people use alcohol, marijuana, or cocaine than is in the case of the general population. And 55% of gay men have had a substance abuse problem sometime in their lives. So getting back to teens and the Trevor Project, do you find that there are many calls where the kids are actually talking about their own alcohol or drug problem when they call in?
You know, we do have some of those. I wouldn't say that with the teens we see that, they don't talk to us that much about it. And as I mentioned, the first thing that we try to do is make sure that they're not considering suicide. Mm-hmm. In the process of our conversation, then we do find out if there's some substance abuse, and there are, you know, a lot of it is mostly harassment. A lot of it is just feeling that they're not going to be able to talk to their families about what they're feeling,
mm-hmm.
that they're being rejected by peers, by their religious sects, and just... And those are the things that we start to talk through first and foremost. But definitely there is substance abuse. There's also a lot of self-affliction that the kids, you know, physical affliction where there's cutting and, you know, cries for help in that sense.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the religious issues. And I know you and I met at the premiere in L.A. of the movie Latter Days, which is actually dealing with a Mormon missionary dealing with the sexual orientation issues. What are you finding in terms of the spiritual or religious issues in terms of the number of callers, teenagers who, I mean, obviously can't speak to mom or dad, but are you finding that there are a certain percentage of them that are feeling this is a sin, I'm going to hell, you know, things like that, and how do you cope with that? Where do you refer those teens to?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of teens call. I think a lot of GLBT adults deal with that as well,
mm-hmm.
depending on how they were brought up in their religion. But there are other, you know, religions that do openly accept GLBT individuals, and we refer them to them if they're looking for some sort of, you know, spiritual, I guess, part in their life, and we certainly encourage any kid that wants to talk to someone about a religious matter. There are, you know, churches out there that do talk to them. And we'll gladly open their arms to them and let them participate in their church groups, in their services, and we definitely refer those individuals.
Now, let's talk about how you get the word out there that you even exist, because obviously shows like this, and you know, I'm hoping that there's somebody out there listening, driving around in their car today around Phoenix, or listening over the internet, that is saying, "Oh, my goodness, I didn't know it exists. I need to place a phone call." But is it that you run ads in high school and junior high school periodicals? How do these teenagers know that you even exist?
You know, and I'm glad you asked her, because as a young organization, it's very important for us to get the word out, and that's why we have fundraisers, to try to raise the funds to be able to do that. It's not as easy as some people think, that someone will gladly run something like a helpline for gay and questioning teens.
That's my point, because
yeah.
I can imagine there'd be an uproar in certain high schools,
absolutely.
And high schools, if the parents saw an ad for the Trevor Project in there.
Most of the U.S. Health and Human Services at the local and regional and certainly nationwide area have our phone number, and we're registered with all of them on the website also. If someone types in suicide and teens and gay, you know, they'll see our number come up. There's also the Hope Network, which runs the 211 number, which is a suicide helpline nationwide, and they look to us and the expertise of gay and questioning teens and refer kids to us. HBO, while they aired this for the last 5 years, would flash our phone number as well. And what we're getting ready to do here in LA, we got our very first grant to do a poster project, which we're going to pilot first here in the Los Angeles area, which is where our headquarters are. And we're going to include a poster with our curriculum. And we have business card size Trevor helpline cards that have our toll-free number on there. And we're going to send those out to every high school and junior high school with information on the Trevor Project to the counselors. And we're hoping to get nationwide funding for this so that we can roll this out nationwide. And we're working with a couple of organizations to assist us with this, and a couple of corporations that have been very supportive as well.
Now, is it the case that, say, in an area as potentially liberal as the Los Angeles Unified School District, that they might run ads in the school newspapers and things like that?
They might. I think they need to first see what we're about. I think in terms of just putting something out there, they have to be protective, and I'm happy that they are. But one of the things that we're doing is working through Project 10, which is a group that works within Los Angeles Unified School District with the gay and lesbian teens and all LGBT kids. And one of the things that we want to do first is get this out to them, prove to them what we're about, and I think that that's a good start before they start doing that. In addition, Clear Channel here in LA has been very good and has given us their support when they go into the high schools and they do these lunch music, you know, kind of presentations to hand out flyers with our information on it as well.
So the kids in Middle America that are not necessarily going to be seeing right away these posters, you're saying most of them actually get your number via the HBO airing and by calling other hotlines, they refer them to yours?
by doing that, by talking to a school counselor. Many, you know, the schools have a listing of health and human services, especially as it deals with suicide prevention, and we're listed with many of them. If somebody calls, you know, the health and human services department in their local area, regional area, they'll have our number there as well. But again, we're going to print extra posters, certainly, and the curriculum and everything that's necessary. And if we got a call from anyone in any state that's at the, you know, school level, and whether it's a counselor, a teacher, someone that's interested in taking this back to their high school, we're certainly not going to, you know, prevent that from happening. We'll make sure that they're equipped with the right tools.
Now, you talked about a curriculum in the schools, and actually before we even get into that, I want to remind my listeners, if you have some questions or some comments about our discussion so far today, about the Trevor Hotline, about GLBT teens, that if you feel like calling in, the number around the Phoenix area is 480 area code 949-1310. So getting back to the curriculum, what exactly does the school curriculum, and is there a different one geared towards middle school as opposed to the high school kids, and what exactly does that curriculum look like, and how easy do you find getting it into the schools?
Well, the good thing is that the curriculum is in such a way that we have middle school teachers that have used it. You know, we have high schools. We even have some college professors that have used this curriculum. It's outlined in such a way that it covers tolerance, it covers acceptance, it covers identifying suicidal tendencies in individuals, especially LGBT, and how to assist them. And so it's built in such a way that there are different questions and different activities that can very much be altered to the audience that you're dealing with at that particular moment. It coincides with the video. And so someone that watches the video, or that as the teacher shows the video first, then they're able to have a discussion from that and have exercises that cover the topics. And so it was created in a very broad manner that will cover just about anyone that you're thinking about. We've also taught it at PTAs. It's also been taught at national level for associations that GLSEN approaches, which is a gay, lesbian, straight education network. And that was taught in Washington, D.C. last year. So it's such a way that it can pretty much be, you know, suited to any group.
And where do you get most of your support, your, you know, financial support, as well as, you know, are there government officials, elected officials that you have on your list of people who are really behind you? And how do you keep yourself going funding-wise?
We have, in terms of funding, we have just started to get some grants. A lot of times people want to make sure that you're around for a while before they're willing to invest in them. Thank goodness, you know, at the six-year mark, approaching our seventh, that has been that's been a good thing for us. But it's mostly the kindness of individuals, individual donations, people that come to our events. Going on our website, there's a section for donations, and we rely on that to help us keep that helpline open and keep the organization alive. And in terms of politicians that are helpful and supportive of us, I know Senator Boxer and Feinstein have been very good with us and donated items even for auction at our events throughout the country.
And how can people reach you in terms of making some donations?
They can go onto our website, again, which is www.thetrevorproject.org, or they can call even the toll-free number, which is 866-4-U-TREVOR, 866-4-U-TREVOR, the last number is a throwaway. But they can direct them to our corporate offices, and we'll gladly talk to anyone, send the material that's necessary, direct them to the website to see more information about who's on our board of directors and on our honorary board, and see the kind of support that we have so that they feel comfortable that what we're doing is literally saving lives on a daily basis.
Speaking of your board of directors, when I was looking at the list, actually a friend of mine and a colleague who's on your board, Ian Silberg, who works at the Gay and Lesbian Center here in Los Angeles, and was a guest on my show about a year ago dealing with gay pride issues. So it was good to see his association with it on your list. And the number you just gave is actually the hotline number, too. So it's not just where people can call who are looking to be supportive financially, but the 866-4-U, the letter U, Trevor, T-R-E-V-O-R, like you said, the last number is a throwaway. So 866-4-U, Trevor, is actually the hotline number if you need to call, if you need some support, as well as want to offer some support. Now, let's talk about your volunteers. Who operates the line? I mean, who are the people that are going to be answering the phone when people call?
Our volunteers that answer that line go through 64 hours of training, and they're screened to make sure that they're able to take the type of calls that we require. Our callers usually take about 20 to 40 minutes per call because these kids are, for the first time, talking to someone, and we need to make sure that the listener is well-trained in the type of, you know, crises that a teen faces. So they go through 64 hours of training, and it's open 24/7. And we have an amazing group of volunteers. We have, the organization alone has about 150 volunteers that we call on throughout the year to help on everything from events to help us, you know, filing at the office, answering the headquarters phone, and again, in terms of the helpline at the call center, they're trained through 64 hours, and we ask for a two-year commitment on the line, 4 hours a week.
Actually, I was going to ask you about that because I know once you put in that much training, it's kind of difficult if you have a lot of turnover because it's really time and experience that makes an even better suicide prevention and support listeners over a telephone line. Now, the line itself, I gather, is in the Los Angeles area. Is that where all of your volunteers are? Or if someone wants to actually be trained to do the emotional support and suicide prevention calls, do they have to live in the L.A. area, or is there a mechanism where they could be doing that from a remote location?
Right now, we do have it centralized, and we have the call center in San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
We have our callers, our volunteers that are the counselors in San Francisco. We contract the Suicide San Francisco Prevention Center to answer our calls, and we went in and we trained the staff, and we do awareness to get volunteers there, and they answer our phone calls. And it's important for now to have it in one location for monitoring purposes.
Mm-hmm.
It is the goal of the organization and its board of directors that we start opening up other call centers or affiliating the Trevor Project with other call centers throughout the United States so that eventually someone in Arkansas could go to, you know, the call center there and be able to pick up Trevor Project phone calls. And, of course, it would require the it requires money to begin with, and then it requires the Trevor Project going in and training, and it's the type of calls that we want, doing some monitoring. We also need to get statistics, so it requires the software and the programs necessary to be able to extract the data that we need for our fundraising purposes and keeping it alive.
Well, this is really interesting. So you're the calls actually go into a line in San Francisco, and you contract with a larger hotline type of agency?
Correct. We contract with someone that already operates 24/7.
Very smart.
And whether and they're all, and even though they're local, ours is nationwide.
Uh-huh.
And so that helps us because it is cost prohibitive for us to have our own call center yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we go in and we train the staff on our type of calls. And, of course, this is after having had numerous conversations with them and making sure that this is something they want. And the good thing is that the high percentage of the people that are answering our calls in San Francisco are LGBT. And so that helps in having a listening ear, someone that understands where the youth is coming from or a parent that may be calling. So we go in, we train them, and monitor the calls. We get the data that's necessary, and it's our hope to do that in more than one call center in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that would be very useful. The other thing is, I know, like I had said earlier, I mean, one of my first counseling gigs actually was as a peer counselor on a hotline at Harper College, which is now Binghamton University in New York State. And it was back in the late 60s, early 70s, when the drug stuff was going on all over the place, and the campus actually allowed the students to set up our own hotline and basically a crash pad so that if someone was on a bad trip, they could drop a friend off and, you know, we talked them down through the night or whatever. And it's an incredible experience, actually, and I think it's what made me, what I think of myself as a much more intuitive therapist, because when you don't have the person physically in front of you to pick up on those cues, you really have to depend on change in tones in the voice or pauses and things like that to really get a feel for what's going on the other end. And I would think that some of the people doing the phone line there may even be graduate students going for degrees to become therapists, because it is such a good training modality.
Absolutely. Many of them are. Many of them already are professionals in the field that just choose to also help, you know, people. And the kindness of the volunteers is very humbling to all of us.
Mm-hmm. What kind of follow-up support? I mean, to me, it's just as important to focus on those that are providing the help as those that need the help in something like this, because the types of calls that these volunteers are getting can be extremely intense. I mean, you have life and death issues you're dealing with on the other line, which could be very overwhelming, and you don't necessarily even know what the outcome is when you hang up with that person, because you really don't know how to reach them. So what kind of follow-up support do the volunteers get periodically or on a regular basis to deal with the emotional drain or the emotional impact it has on them as volunteers?
You know, that is one of the reasons why they have rotating, you know, shifts to begin with. I can't think of somebody being there day in and day out.
Yeah.
You want them to feel refreshed. The one thing that they always say is that they appreciate getting the Trevor calls, because when that teen has called, they're looking for someone to help them. They're looking, you know, and so they're very open to receiving the counsel. But in terms of our volunteers and what they have to go through, we make sure that there's, you know, that it's in shifts, that they're able to take the calls at that time, and the supervisors are very, very good. I mean, San Francisco Suicide Prevention Center is one of the best in the nation, and we would not align ourselves with anyone that didn't have that type of reputation. And so the supervisors are able to tell when a volunteer probably is just not in the right frame of mind to be taking those calls. And it's not like it's only one person
right
there. They have several. And at any time, I'm sure the supervisor is able to tell when one of the volunteers probably needs to rest or talk and work through it. I can only imagine, and I know that some of the calls that they take are quite you know, quite difficult to listen to.
Right. And my experience has been most of these types of agencies that provide this type of service, I know even with APLA and the hotline that, you know, they have, so they have at least monthly support groups for the volunteers, in other words, for them to be able to process through the impact, whether it's sharing some real great wins and what a, you know, a wonderful feeling it is because they, you know, had a certain call, or because it's been a particularly draining month for them, that there are certain, you know, ongoing support groups for the volunteers so that they have a place to process what's going on as a volunteer for these hotlines.
Well, and if you can imagine when you did it, you know, you become close to the people on your shift.
Right.
And that itself becomes some sort of a support group, too, in terms of talking through that.
Mm-hmm. What have I not asked you that you feel is important that people know and understand about GLBT teams or about the Trevor Project?
Well, I think first and foremost is that I'm glad you've mentioned the statistics, and I know you said early on that you're not a statistics type of person, or you try not to, but, you know, just so people understand, again, when gay teens are three times more likely to commit suicide than their heterosexual peers, I mean, that tells us something, you know. And there was and that was by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, as you noted earlier. The Seattle school system also did a study which found that gay youth in grades 7 to 12 are 2 times more likely to make a plan to commit suicide than straight youth, and 4 times more likely to make a suicide attempt that requires medical attention. So to anyone out there listening, you know, whether you're a teen, whether you're a parent, whether you're a friend, that may think, you know, you have someone that is going through issues on their sexuality and possibly contemplating suicide, or that might be something, then, you know, there is hope and there is help, and that's why the Trevor Project was created, and that's why it exists, to help people and to help teens and to keep them alive. And the last thing is that we have a fundraising event coming up in New York City on May 2nd.
That was my next question. Good. Go ahead.
Yeah. And it's these fundraising events that, you know, do keep us alive. It's on Monday, May the 3rd. And it is going to be a very, very fun show. We have Carson Kressley of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy who will be there. Leah Delaria, Lipsinka. We have a huge slew of celebrities that do support us, and it's going to be a good time. At our events, we have comedy and musical acts because we feel that it's a celebration of life, and that is what we do. We keep teens alive, and we want to celebrate the fact that we're alive and we're here on Earth, and it's a big place. There's room for everyone here.
Now, I noticed on your website under events that for upcoming events, says it's under construction. So if somebody's interested in that New York event, how do they get tickets? How do they...
That will be up by Monday morning.
Okay.
Because I just reviewed the site for this particular event last night.
Uh-huh.
If for some reason they do have questions from now until then, they can call us at our offices. And that phone number is area code 310-271-8888. And we'll be more than happy to give them more details on the event in New York.
Okay, say the number again.
Area code 310-271-8845.
Great. So that is coming up in New York. Where is that event going to take place in New York?
It's taking place at a place called Show Nightclub. And it's all to ours. We have it all to ourselves that evening. It's at 135 West 41st Street, and Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS is one of our sponsors. Bacardi is one of our sponsors. They've been long-term supporters of the organization. They lend their financial support to us and their volunteer efforts as well. So we're very happy to have their continued support with us.
Great. Now I'm going to give you an opportunity here before we close. If there was one important statement you'd want to make to GLBT teens out there who are struggling, what would you say to them?
You're not alone. There are kids that are going through the same thing you are all over the nation. Trust us, we take those calls. And call if you have any questions, crises, if you're going through whatever, if you need someone to talk to, please give us a call at our toll-free helpline, which is 1-866-4-U-Trevor. And we have counselors 24/7 ready to pick up the phone and talk to you.
Now, one other question.
I thought that was the last one.
No, I thought of another one.
That's good.
To the bullies out there, what would you say to them? Those kids in the schools that are really making a living hell out of it for, you know, the fag.
You know,
there, for lack of a better word.
I only wish that bullies like that understood the long-term damage that they're creating. I don't believe that they always do. I'd like to think that they don't understand any long-term effects that they're causing. But it's horrific. And I know that I would never want on my conscience that someone had attempted suicide or certainly was contemplating it because of my actions. And those bullies, you know, when they get older, they find out that there are other bullies, and that it's something that they just don't want to go through, whether it's in the workforce, in marriages, it doesn't really matter. And I just think, you know, the long-term effect of name-calling or bullying people around is very detrimental and life-threatening.
Yeah. And for those of us that had to deal with that as kids and stuff, you know, even as a kid, you know, I think that being the recipient of the teasing, I mean, to me, it wasn't so much bullying, it was being teased. And there weren't as many words for it back then, you know, in the 50s and 60s. You know, the basic word was sissy. You know, nobody knew the word fag or, you know, queer and things like that. It was basically being called a sissy, and that hurt through and through. And, you know, most people looking at me today or meeting me today would be surprised that that's what I endured back then. But we all go through our growth periods and come across in a lot of different ways, and to be able to teach tolerance in the school system is so important, and especially teaching the teachers.
Absolutely.
There are a lot of them who don't stand up and back up those kids.
Starts at the top, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, definitely, and the administrators, obviously. So, sometime this week, George, I'm going to be giving you a call because I want to get hold of a TSA and I want to start running it on my show on a regular basis for the Trevor Project.
Thank you very much.
To me, it's a very important thing that you're doing, and I really want to thank you for being on the show today and taking your time, and anything else I can do to be able to support you guys, just feel free to ask.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure, and anytime you have a spot for us, we'll be there.
Great. In closing, I really want to thank my listeners and to the emails I do get. And if you didn't get down any of the information on the Trevor Project, or if you want to get in touch with me or George, you can do that through the website for my show, tellthetruthfaster.com, and there'll be a hyperlink to the Trevor Project's website so we can get all that information. You can email George there. You can email me at tellthetruthfaster.com, and I do appreciate the emails I get. I know that a lot of people are hesitant to call in, but I've gotten some very interesting emails and very supportive emails. And now that I've switched to this new time on Saturdays at 1 o'clock Phoenix time, it's been really great. One of the emails I got today, because I send out a weekly email announcement about what the topic is and who my guest is. When I sent it out this week, I got an email from somebody here in L.A. named Brad. And